Take
All right,
care.
We're going to flip over now to George Zornick. He is the Washington editor for The Nation magazine. You can follow George at G Zornick. George, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for having me on.
So am I right in sort of parsing that this out into very narrow sorts of interpretations of what the president's statement means?
Yeah, and I think if I were Robert Mueller or if I were heads of either the House or Senate intelligence committees that are looking into this whole matter, I would shoot a subpoena over to the White House for any and all tapes or documentation that they may have of his conversations with Comey, because a statement on Twitter is one thing. Saying I don't have any tapes is not a legally binding thing, but I think we should be able to examine, or at least they should be able to examine, an official legal response to a subpoena that says, you know, I do not have these tapes. If he says that to the special counsel, to Robert Mueller, then I will believe it. But as of right now, I kind of question it, particularly given what we know about Trump's past. I mean, if you read all these biographies of Trump, he's been known to tape record conversations in his office. Even sometimes the guests down at Mar-a-Lago thought that he was listening in on the phones. So does he have tapes? Maybe. I kind of lean to he does, but we should get an official legal answer, not just a 140-word tweet.
Well, I would also argue that they should... They should. I'm laughing at myself because I really think this is true. They should spread. They should broaden out their request to include any and all tapes that may or may not, or perhaps have been incidentally recorded, perhaps have been in the process of surveillance of the White House. You know what I mean? So that loophole, as it is left open, becomes a closed matter.
Yeah, exactly. Because as you pointed out, you know, Trump said he doesn't have them, but does Steve Bannon have them?
Right.
You know,
who,
Secretary or.
And this is a game that he plays. And so as opposed to being outraged, just go, okay, that's Mr. Trump playing his game. And let's have at it, yes or no. Well, I'm going to leave that one behind because I want to get into the health care bill. And we have relatively limited amounts of time. Again, our number is 800-222-5222. This is George Zornick. He's the Washington editor for The Nation. And we've got what I think is going to be some horse trading coming up in the Senate. And I think that's the reason there are holdouts on this health care bill, that and politics. Am I wrong?
No, that's absolutely right. It's interesting and kind of bad. If you don't want the bill to pass, it's kind of worrying that the people who are holding out now are the very hardcore conservatives, you know, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul, Ron Johnson from Wisconsin, because this is the same song and dance we saw in the House where the hardcore conservatives, the Freedom Caucus said, well, this bill doesn't go far enough. You know, some changes were made, frankly, cosmetic changes, though they did make the bill a little bit worse. And then the conservatives were able to say, okay, we approve. I mean, this puts a conservative stamp of approval on the bill. It gets Ted Cruz and Rand Paul sort of their 15 minutes during this whole process, which is very important to them based on what we know about them.
Yeah, it's right. It's Cruz and Paul and these guys giving a chance to get out there. And I don't we presume that they were somehow, at least if not in the room, certainly knew what was going on in the rooms and was – you know, available to adjust and to approve what was finally the Senate bill, and that this now becomes just an opportunity to do politics?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Ted Cruz and Mike Lee were both actually on the 13-person working group that's been making this in secret. Rand Paul and Ron Johnson were not. But I would wait and see. When they say no, then I'll believe it. But even in their statement announcing opposition, they said, well, we're not ready yet, but we're very open to negotiation. So
yeah,
it's kind
close.
Of think Mitch McConnell, throw us a cookie and we'll see.
Yeah, that's what that is. I'm sure that's what that is. And so that's going to go through. Well, what's in this bill? Because I believe it's going to go through after the horse trading is done.
I agree with that assessment. I mean, in the broad strokes, what it is a very large tax cut for top earners, and it's financed by lowering health spending, primarily on Medicaid, but also reducing some of the subsidies that are given to folks to buy insurance. Now, it's not a full Obamacare repeal, which is kind of what Cruz and Paul are motioning towards. There still will be some subsidies for people to buy health insurance. So in that sense, it leaves us a little bit ahead of where we were before Obamacare passed. But what it does to Medicaid is historic. I mean, we haven't pared back the social safety net in some time. And this basically refigures Medicaid over the next 10 years to kick about 23 million people off it. That's what the House bill did. We'll see what the CBO says about the Senate bill tomorrow, but I'm guessing it will be in that ballpark.
And what does it leave open for the states to do in response to that?
Well, it gives states a lot of leeway to just sort of decide Medicaid rules as they want. So they can kick off who they want. They can, in other cases, waive some of the essential health benefits, which is essentially guarantees pre-existing condition coverage for folks. It gives the states a lot of leeway. So I think what you'll see is in places out there like California or here on the East Coast in New York, the changes will be less dramatic, but in red states controlled unilaterally by Republicans in the state legislature and the governor's office, you'll see much more radical and I would argue harsh changes.